Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something that I think defines modern adulthood more than almost anything else.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge, it is terrifyingly expensive, and the research suggests it's about as relaxing as a root canal.
Let me guess, we're talking about buying a first home.
We are, of course, talking about buying a first home.
It is the topic of the decade. And honestly, looking at the data, it's the source of so much anxiety.
I believe it. And what? I think for most people tuning in, that anxiety really boils down to one specific massive number.
The down payment.
Down payment. It feels like this, you know, unclimbable wall. You've got rents hitting record highs, listings that vanish in a day.
And the cost of just living squeezing you from all sides.
Exactly. I feel like you had to make this one giant impossible leap. You just scrape every penny together. You jump and you, well, you pray you land in the house.
That is the visceral feeling of it for sure. But what's interesting in the research we pulled for today is that, well, treating it like one big leap is actually where people get stuck. It's rarely one leap. It's a sequence of strategic decisions. And the people who get there, they aren't just saving harder, they're saving smarter.
Right. And that brings us to all the acronyms. We're decoding the government's registered savings plans.
The alphabet soup.
Specifically, the RRSP home buyers plan. So the HBP and the new first home savings account, the FHSA.
Two extremely powerful tools, but also two of the most misunderstood.
Well, here's the misconception I want to clear up right away, because I see this online all the time. People just lump them together.
Yeah, they do.
They think, great, two buckets of tax-free money. I'll just fill them both up, cash out, and get the keys.
That is the default view, and it's dangerous, because these aren't just two similar buckets with different labels. They represent two completely different philosophies.
Different philosophies of wealth building.
Exactly. And if you use them the wrong way or, you know, in the wrong order, you can actually back yourself into a financial corner.
So our mission today is to move beyond just the tax code. We're not just reading the rules. We're going to look at the strategy.
Right.
We're going to frame the HBP as a bridge and the FHSA as a runway.
I love those analogies because they imply motion. And that's what this is about, moving capital from savings to equity.
We'll break down the mechanics for sure, but we're also going to look at the hidden risks, specifically this idea of financial fragility. Because you can technically afford a house and still be completely broke.
Oh, absolutely. That is the house poor phenomenon. And these plans, if you misuse them, can fast track you right into that trap.
Okay, so before we get into the gears and levers of the accounts, let's zoom out. Why do these programs even exist? I mean, do they actually make housing cheaper?
No. And that is the hard truth we have to start with.
Okay.
These plans do not lower the price of a home. They don't cool the market. In fact, some economists argue they just add more demand.
So what's the point then?
What they are designed to do is make the act of saving more efficient.
Okay, when you say efficient, walk me through that.
Yeah.
Because to the average person, saving is just not spending money.
Well, think about something I call the tax leak. This is the friction that kills your momentum.
Tax leak.
Yeah. Let's say you're in a, I don't know, 30 to 40% marginal tax bracket, which is pretty common for aspiring homeowners. If you want to save $1,000 for a down payment, you first have to earn about $1,400 or $1,500.
Right, because the government takes its cut off the top before that money even hits your bank account.
Exactly. And then you put that remaining $1,000 in a regular savings account. If it earns any interest, guess what? The government taxes that growth too.
So you're swimming upstream.
You're swimming upstream. That friction slows you down a lot over the 5 or 10 years it takes to save. These registered plans are designed to plug that lick.
So instead of meeting $1,500 of effort to get $1,000 of savings, you get more of a one-to-one ratio.
Or better. But the research also pointed to something, well, less mathematical. The psychology of it all.
Yes, the behavioral science aspect. This fascinated me.
It is arguably more important than the tax breaks. Saving for a home is competing against your real daily life.
It's competing against rent, groceries, that weekend trip, your car breaking down.
All of it. And we know from behavioral science that willpower is a finite resource. You run out of it by Friday afternoon.
Right. If your strategy is just, I'll save whatever's left at the end of the month, the answer is usually zero.
Precisely. These plans provide a container. They turn this abstract wish of buying a house someday into a real, trackable project.
It's almost like gamification. in a way.
A little bit. You see the number in that special account go up, and it feels different than just money sitting in your checking account. It feels protected.
It signals to your brain, this money has a job, do not touch it for pizza.
Exactly.
Okay, let's look at the first tool, the new kid on the block, the first home savings account, or FHSA. We're calling this the runway. Why that image?
Because a runway is a purpose-built strip of pavement designed to let a plane build massive momentum so it can take off. That is exactly what the FHSA is. It's a purpose-built container designed specifically to accelerate your savings for a first home.
It seems like the government finally realized there was a square peg, round hole problem happening.
That is exactly right. Before the FHSA, people were using RSPs, which are for retirement, to buy homes because there wasn't a better option.
Or TFSAs, which are flexible but don't give you that upfront tax break.
Right. So the FHSA solves that mismatch. It is a clean container.
So talk to me about the mechanics of this runway. What makes it so powerful?
It basically combines the superpowers of the other two accounts. When you put money in, it's tax deductible.
That's the RRSP superpower.
It is. It reduces your taxable income for the year.
So let's play that out. If I earn $80,000 and I put the max annual contribution of $8,000 into my FHSA, the government taxes me as if I only earned $72,000.
Correct. Which means you generate a tax refund. And if you're smart, and this is the key to the runway, you take that tax refund and you throw it right back into the savings pile.
That's the acceleration. You're compounding your own tax savings.
You got it.
Okay, so that's the entry. What about the exit?
That's the TFSA superpower. When you take the money out, as long as it's for a qualifying home purchase, it's completely tax-free.
Wow.
You don't pay tax on the principal, and you don't pay tax on any of the investment growth.
That really is the sweet spot. Deductible in, tax-free out. I feel like there's almost nowhere else in the tax code that allows that kind of double dip.
It's pretty unique. And you start with $8,000 of participation room in the first year you open it, with a lifetime limit of $40,000.
Okay, something in the notes about transfers caught my eye. You can move money from an RRSP into an FHSA.
Yes, and this is a great strategy for people who might be cash poor but have some retirement savings built up. You can transfer funds from an RRSP into an FHSA, tax-free.
Okay.
Now, you don't get a new tax deduction for that because you already got one when you first put the money in the RRSP.
But you're moving it from a taxable on exit bucket to a tax-free on exit bucket.
Exactly. You're upgrading the quality of that money. You're cleaning it up.
But the biggest differentiator for the FHSA, especially compared to the other plan we'll talk about, is what happens after you buy the house.
This is why we call it the runway. Once you take off, once you buy the house, you leave the runway behind. It's a clean exit.
Clean exit.
You don't owe the government anything. You don't have to pay the money back. The account has done its job, and you're free.
That sounds remarkably stress-free, which I'm assuming is intentional.
It is. It acknowledges that buying a home is already so demanding. You have a new mortgage, property taxes, maintenance. The government realized that adding a complex repayment schedule on top of all that was, well, burdensome.
So the FHSA is one and done.
One and done.
Okay, so that's the runway. Build speed, take off, don't look back.
No.
Now let's talk about the veteran in the room, the RRSP Homebuyers Plan, or HBP. We're calling this one the bridge.
Right, and a bridge is fundamentally different. A bridge is infrastructure that helps you cross a gap.
What's the gap here?
The gap between having your savings locked away in a retirement account and needing that cash now for a down payment.
Oh.
But the defining feature of this bridge is you have to rebuild it behind you after you cross.
This is the part that trips people up. It's not really withdrawal, is it?
Conceptually, no. It's effectively a zero interest loan from your future self.
From my future self.
Okay. The government lets you access your retirement money. The current limit is $60,000 without paying the huge tax penalty that usually comes with breaking into an RRSP early.
But there's a catch.
There is a strict obligation. You must repay those funds into your RRSP.
How does that work?
The repayment period usually starts the second year after you withdraw, and you have 15 years to pay it all back.
Okay, I want to play devil's advocate. Is it really a trap? Because 15 years is a long time. If I borrow the full $60,000, that's $4,000 a year.
Right.
That's what, about $333 a month? That doesn't sound overwhelming for someone who just bought a house.
Mathematically, you're right. $333 a month is manageable, but behaviorally, it's a nightmare.
How so?
Because you just bought a house, you are likely house poor, you drained your accounts for closing costs, you need furniture, the water heater just died, property taxes went up.
Right.
And you're adjusting to a mortgage payment that's probably way higher than your old rent. And now, on top of all of that, you have to find an extra $333 a month to put into an account you can't touch for 30 years.
When you put it that way, it feels like lighting money on fire when you desperately need cash flow today.
That's it. And that is where the trap snaps shut. If you miss a required repayment, let's say money's tight 1 year and you just skip it, the government doesn't send a collection agency.
What do they do?
They just take the amount you should have paid and add it to your taxable income for that year.
Ouch. So in a year where you're already broke, you get hit with a bigger tax bill.
It kicks you when you are down. And this creates a long tail to the purchase. The financial story doesn't end on moving day.
Right. You're carrying this backpack of debt into years where you might have expensive childcare costs. Or maybe one of you wants to go down to part-time work.
Mm-hmm. That repayment is an invisible fixed cost in your life.
That's such a critical point. It shifts the strain forward in time. You solve the problem today, getting the down payment, but you create a new pressure for tomorrow.
And there's another cost, a silent one that most people ignore.
Opportunity cost.
Opportunity cost. Because that money was supposed to be growing for retirement.
Right. The whole point of an RRSP.
The engine of retirement saving is compounding. Time in the market. When you pull $60,000 out of an RRSP for the HBP, you aren't just taking the principal. You are interrupting years of compound growth.
So even if you pay it back perfectly, you've lost all the growth that money would have earned while it was out of the market.
It is a trade-off. It is never free money. It's borrowing from your future security to fund your present desire.
So the HBP is a bridge. It gets you across the gap, but you arrive on the other side with a debt to yourself.
Now here's a $1 million question. Can you use both? Can I build a runway and a bridge?
Yes, you can. The system allows a buyer, if they meet all the conditions, to use both the HBP and a qualifying FHSA withdrawal for the same home.
That sounds like the ultimate strategy, stacking the tools to get the biggest down payment possible.
It certainly allows you to assemble a down payment from different pools of savings.
Mm.
And for many people, especially in, you know, high-cost cities like Toronto or Vancouver, stacking is the only way in. But this is where we have to have a serious talk about strategy versus fragility.
Fragility. That's a word you don't hear often in real estate brochures.
No, you don't. But it's the hidden enemy of first-time buyers. We need to distinguish between a resilient plan and a fragile plan.
Okay, walk me through a resilient plan. What does that look like? A resilient plan uses these tools to preserve your safety net. Let's say you have $80,000 in cash. You could put $40,000 down on the house. But maybe you use the HBP to access another $20,000 from your RRSP.
Why?
Specifically so that you can keep $20,000 of your hard cash in a savings account as an emergency fund.
I see. So you're using the bridge not to stretch your budget, but to create a buffer for yourself.
Exactly. You are buying resilience. You sleep better knowing if the furnace breaks, you have cash. You aren't liquidating your entire life just to get the keys.
Okay, versus the fragile plan.
The fragile plan is when you use both tools to stretch into a price range that is barely affordable. The plan is drain the FHSA completely, max out the HBP, drain the TFSA, scrape every cushion, and you land in the house with $0 left.
And then life happens.
Right. If your plan requires maximizing every single account and it relies on perfect rental income from a basement suite and it requires you having no bad months, that's a fragile plan. You are one bad event away from disaster.
The sources call this financial gymnastics. I love that term.
It's a good one.
It's like if you have to do a triple backflip through the tax code just to prove you can afford the monthly nut, maybe you shouldn't be buying that specific house.
It is a massive warning sign. We have to remember that debt service ratios, those numbers, the bank crunches, they aren't just hoops to jump through. They're risk signals.
Right.
As housing takes up more of your income, your ability to absorb shocks just it plummets. And if that HBP repayment is the straw that breaks the camel's back 3 years later, the strategy failed.
So what does this all mean for the listener? We've got the runway, we've got the bridge, but there's a big reality check here about affordability, isn't there?
The reality check is that affordability is a lifestyle, not just a transaction.
Say more about that. Because we tend to view affordability as just, did the bank give me the loan?
Right. But these registered plans, they solve the front end problem. They get you the entry ticket. They get you past the velvet rope.
But they don't solve the monthly affordability problem.
No. Yeah. They don't lower your mortgage payment. They don't pay for the new roof or the condo fees.
This is the front end delusion. You feel rich because you have the down payment, but you're actually house poor the moment you sign the deed.
Exactly. The FHSA is fantastic, but if you drain it completely, you've exposed that no cushion left issue. And the HBP, well, a poorly used HBP creates that invisible pressure we talked about. It shifts the strain.
And we touched on this, but the idea of rental helpers buying a place with a suite to help pay the mortgage, that plays into this too.
It does. It's another form of stacking dependencies. If you need the HBP and the FHSA and a tenant paying top dollar every single month just to keep the lights on, you're stacking risk on top of risk. You're dependent on everything going right.
And in homeownership, things rarely go 100% right.
Never. The tenant leaves, the roof leaks, interest rates renew higher. If you built a bridge that collapses under a strong wind, it wasn't a good bridge.
So let's bring this home. For someone listening who's staring at that down payment mountain, trying to figure out where to put their next paycheck, how should they view these tools?
Think of the FHSA as your primary engine. It is the runway. It's the best mathematical advantage you have. It's clean, it's efficient, it aligns with the goal.
So prioritize that one. Max it out first if you can.
Yes, because it gives you the tax break now and the freedom later.
And the HPP.
The HPP is the bridge. Use it if you need to cross a specific gap or maybe to unlock liquidity so you can preserve an emergency fund. But treat it with respect. Understand it's a loan from your future self.
Don't just use it to buy more house than you can actually afford.
That's the key.
I love that distinction. The goal isn't just to win the race to the down payment.
No, the goal is to enter home ownership with options, with resilience. Mm-hmm. You want the ability to handle a bad month without panicking.
You want to be able to sleep at night, not just own a deed.
That's it. True financial literacy isn't just knowing the rules of the accounts, it's understanding the risk you're taking on.
So here's a final thought for everyone listening to mull over. We talked about borrowing from your future self with the HBP. I want you to really visualize that future self.
It's a good exercise.
Are you using these tools to support a life that future you can actually enjoy? Or are you using them to enable a purchase that requires future you to be perfect?
To never get sick, never lose a job, never want to take a vacation.
That's the question. Are you setting your future self up for success, or are you setting them up for a trap?
A bridge is only useful if there's solid ground on the other side.
Thanks for diving in with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And as always, check the show notes for the official government links to check your specific eligibility. Safe saving, everyone.